Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. Today, we're going to talk about outsourcing, like when it's a good idea to get people to help you out with different things. And I'm very excited to have the original band back together here. So Carl, welcome to the studio.
Thank you, Doug.
It's good to have you back here. And Rusty, you are joining us because you're one of our favorite co-hosts.
Cool. Thank you.
So welcome.
Yeah. Glad to be here.
And we have a great outline here. We just finished recording it turns out to be outtakes, but we did the sound check. It's awesome today. Rusty commented that it was classic Mile High Fi. So I highly encourage you to check it out if you're a longtime fan of the show. If this is your first episode, brace yourself for the content at the end. It was really good. So the origin of today's episode is from Carl. So Carl, you actually had the idea for this, and then Rusty and I threw it around a little bit, and I think we have a pretty good episode around when we can buy back our time, when it's a good idea to do that, and we're going to disagree on many of the different points. I think this is a kind of a cool thing that came out. Basically, some things that are valuable to some people are not to others, and maybe you enjoy certain things and other people don't. So this is really a choose your own adventure. So I'm going to just get a little update from Carl. We haven't talked to you in a little while. What's been going on? You've done some travel. You've done some other work. But yeah, what's new?
Yeah, it's been a pretty busy spring. We went on a river cruise, the same one you went on for your honeymoon, I believe. So we went to Amsterdam and Belgium. That was super cool. I feel like there was some other travel in there, but I cannot remember what it was, so it must have not been that memorable. We are also almost done. Speaking of the topic today, insourcing versus outsourcing, we are almost done with our house project, which is the single biggest thing I've taken on in my life, and it is almost done. And that has been consuming me, especially this week. I know I had to cancel on you on Monday. We're not recording on Monday, so sorry about that, Doug. But
it's cool.
Life is good. It's just a little bit hectic, and it's a little bit hot here in Longmont now.
Yeah. And I'm looking forward to catching up on some of the other travels. I remember a couple of the things you did, even though, I mean, you've been busy, so it's hard to remember all the stuff. And I've gone on a few trips too. And I'm like, when was I gone? This is unusual. So anyway, and then Rusty, what is new with you?
Well, we have a baby, so we're just in baby world and everything's a blur. I can't even really remember what update I gave about baby things last time we recorded. Yeah, we're doing that. And then next week we head up to Breckenridge for the rest of the summer. Cool. So be up there over 2 months. So looking forward to that.
Awesome. Very cool. Yeah, I'm hoping, I haven't told you yet, but I'm hoping to be able to go up there sometime, not necessarily to stay at your place, but like it gets hot down here and some of our travel plans have changed and it would be cool to hang out in Frisco or somewhere close by, hang out with you guys.
Are you trying to pressure me into hanging out with you, Doug? Getting me on air?
Please. I mean, you don't have to commit now, but if you could answer now, that would really appreciate it.
You guys are always welcome up there for sure.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay. So let's get to some of the stuff. And we kind of have a bit of an outline. We'll go back and forth. Before we do, I know, Rusty, you had some specific thoughts. You could expand on it if you would like, if I mentioned it earlier, but what are your thoughts on just like outsourcing in general and getting used to the idea to like spend money on services?
This is one I was introduced to fairly early, like in my, whatever, my adult life. There's a book, or there's an author, AJ Jacobs, and he considers himself the human guinea pig. And one of the things he did is he tried to outsource everything in his life. He like literally hired a team of people in India to be his personal assistant. And he even had him do things like write personal emails to his mom for her birthday and things like that. And so it was a really kind of silly way, I think, to kind of play with the idea. But I was like, this is actually a really good thing to keep in mind as you go through life. Like, what can you outsource? What can't you outsource? Or what is advantageous to outsource? What isn't? And so I guess some of my ideas that I think about with outsourcing is like, first, like be intentional about it. Always kind of keep it in your mind. Think about especially if you're doing something that you don't enjoy, think about like, how could I get someone else to do this for me? And that, you know, like you alluded to in the intro, like the goal is to free up space on things that don't matter to you so that you can spend your time doing the things that do matter to you. And I think we outsource well when we manage our outsourcing to suit our purposes, and we do it badly when we let some external entity rewrite our core values so that we're serving its purposes instead. So you think of a company convincing you to buy something that you don't really want to buy, then that's not good outsourcing. But if you're like, I don't like cleaning my house, I'll pay someone else to do it. That's a good example of outsourcing. There's part of it too, especially, you know, the DIY mentality with investing or home repairs is kind of big in the FIRE movement. And I do think that, like, you do have to rely on the work of others at some point. And everyone does it, even if they think they're totally self-sufficient and self-reliant. No one's building their own computer parts from scratch. No one's, you know, cutting their own timber or mining their own steel and things like that. So everyone, it's a myth that you can be totally self-reliant. Even the people who live off the grid, I think you could probably go find examples of them using things that are made by other people. So everyone does it to some extent. So I think the question then becomes, what do you want to outsource? What don't you want to outsource? And then there's also, like, there are clearly things, there are examples you can think of that don't make sense to outsource. Like, I think of my son playing with his Legos, and, like, for him to outsource that to someone else would be, he'd be like, what are you talking about? This is my core value. Playing with, yeah, I'm not going to pay someone else to build my Legos for me. Or, like, you know, I want to outsource, like, sleeping with my wife. That's right. One that, that came to mind as I was watching the 50 Cent's P. Diddy documentary. So, not to spoil that documentary for anyone else, but that was something that P. Diddy chose to outsource, where I was like, I don't think I would personally choose to outsource that one. So
I haven't seen that yet. So yeah. It's okay.
I didn't mean that as a personal attack on you, Carl. Saw your shocked expression there.
Yeah, we could. Yeah. We could remove that from the outline, I guess. Okay. And then, Carl, I think, you know, again, at a high level, we'll go through some specifics, but have you had struggles to outsource? Like Rusty said, you had this kind of in mind early on, and you'll have some examples where you've, like, tested this when you were much younger. So, Carl, have you had some struggles over the years where you're like, if I can do something, I will do it, because, like, that's just your habit, that's your values. So I'll leave it open from there.
Yeah, I'll back up a second and say, I think this is an evolving tactic in life. When you're young, you probably shouldn't pay a house cleaner $200 if you don't have that much money to begin with and you still have debt. But when you accumulate wealth and you have enough, then it's time to really consider what you outsource and what you continue to do yourself, which is where the three of us are right now. And I have big time trust issues. We've hired people, and I know you have, Doug, too. I remember your sink, that the guy left the cardboard thing in there, so your sink leaked. And it makes me mad when I hire someone for a task that I could do myself, and then they do a worse job at it. And then you got to call them back or deal with that kind of nonsense. So that is annoying. But I will say, if you can get past that and find good people to do work, it's, which we've done with this house build, that's been our life for the past 8 months, and we have outsourced almost all of it. And the only times the build has gone awry is when I got smart and tried to insource a couple things. Then it went off the rails and turned out very badly. But yes, it has been a struggle. It is out of my comfort zone to, which this sounds kind of odd because I'm doing some highly technical work like heat pump installs and solar panels, but it seems out of my comfort zone to let other people do that. But that's a flaw with me. Mm.
Cool. All right. I think we can get into some of the specifics if you guys are ready for that.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about one that a lot of people are giving a shot around here. I think it might be one that we may test out before too long. That's house cleaning. So, Rusty, I'll kick it to you because you have a good story from your youth, really.
Yeah. So, I guess big picture, I think house cleaning is one that for pretty much everyone, or for pretty much all wealthy people, it makes sense to outsource. I think, I mean, I'm guessing there's maybe a very small percentage of the people who truly get joy out of cleaning their house, but I'd say the vast majority of people who are cleaning their own house and say that they, or claim that they enjoy it, are fooling themselves. And it's culturally very common outside of the United States, is something that I've learned, for wealthy people to not clean their own houses. But I think in the US, we have that Puritan work ethic. And then we also struggle with being perceived as elitist if you have someone else clean your house. we differed from the mainstream. We've had someone clean our house since we were 25 years old. So that's when we started graduate school. We were in Iowa, so it was fairly inexpensive. And the whole time we had someone clean our house, we always kind of did it in an expensive way. But we did it once a month, and it was $100 a month. And so for $1,200 a year, we didn't have to clean our house, and we could spend our time then studying and trying to get good grades, which was, you know, our primary objective in graduate school. And our friends found out that we had a house cleaner, and it wasn't something we tried to hide, but they'd come over and be like, "Oh, your house is so clean." I'd be like, "Oh yeah, thanks. The cleaners just came." And they'd be like, "What? Cleaners?" And like, in graduate school, they're like, "That's just like totally irresponsible financially." I was like, "Well, let's back up and consider the whole picture here. We chose a school that we got full scholarships to, so we're not paying anything to go to school. We're living in Iowa, which is about as low of cost of living for, you know, living in Iowa City, which is about as low of cost of living as a college town comes. And so like, and then we decided to do this one bougie thing, I guess, which was like have a cleaner. But in the context of like the bigger graduate school decision, I was like, we were incredibly financially responsible, especially like when we got to our jobs in Chicago and people were in six figures of debt from graduate school, and we had no debt. I was like, I don't think we did something irresponsible here. But people just were, you know, shocked that we could be in graduate school and would be paying for someone else to clean our house.
And then
when we were in Chicago, we had a cleaner. They would come weekly, and they would clean our house and they would do our laundry. It was $70 a week, and that freed up. But that freed up so much time, and our free time in particular was so valuable to us, because we just didn't have a lot of it, and to never have to do cleaning or laundry was fantastic. And the reason it was so cheap is because we had a 700 square foot apartment. So I think our cleaner literally would get done in an hour. They'd go clean other buildings, or they'd go clean other apartments in our building while they were doing our laundry then. And then they'd just, you know, fold our laundry at the end of the day. And so you come home, our apartment would be clean, all of our laundry would be done, and we never had to go fight for a washing machine or dryer on the weekends. Those were all shared in our building. And so we never had to go fight the crowds to do that on the weekends. And that was another one where it's like, oh, that feels like that's a great use of money.
Ooh, I think you hit on something super important there. And just to back up a second, if you would ask someone like Warren Buffett or some old person, they would give you their whole entire fortune to be young again, which means they're buying back their time. But it's hard to see that and embrace that when you're young like you did. So that's it's pretty cool that you did that so young. We have a house cleaner as well, but it's a very recent phenomenon. And at first I was very much against it. And you said you are the elitist comment. And I used to be like that too. I'd walk around my neighborhood and see the people carrying the mops inside, and I'd be like super judging them in my head. Like, wow, these people can't even clean their own house. But now that we have a cleaner and we're on the other side of that, like, this is amazing. Now we don't have to spend time doing this. We can actually do something we genuinely enjoy. And they do a much better job at it too. Like, they're fantastic. Mm-hmm. They do a better job than we ever could. Again, getting outside of the comfort zone and trying this to see how it worked out proved to be super cool.
Did you have to, I don't know how much it cost, but do you have to pay extra because of the bathroom?
Sometimes, yeah. Okay. Especially since I've been taking the psyllium husk and which makes, you know, the volcano Krakatoa, which blew up and did a whole bunch of bad things.
Yeah.
That's
it's like the 1800s or something.
Yes. Right? It was a huge explosion. That's what my bathroom time is like now. So the cleaner will come in there. I think she almost quit, but I'm like, no, we'll pay you more. It's fine.
Yeah. How often?
Is that why you started outsourcing it? You're like, I can't be cleaning this up anymore. It's just too disgusting.
We'll just get a new toilet. Yeah. It's easier.
Outhouse.
How often do they clean the bathroom? Yeah, the whole house.
They clean the house every other week, and it is $200 a cleaning, and we have like 2,400 square feet.
Okay. And then how long does it typically take them to clean the house?
Oh, she's there for a good, like, usually 3 hours.
Okay, cool. And then do you know how much time that's saving you? Conceivably, like, she's maybe more efficient and maybe you wouldn't spend as much time. I've been to your house, so I kind of...
Well, no, that's actually a good point. Neither of us, we don't have the time, and neither of us like to clean, so our house would devolve into chaos. I think I do not like clutter. It gives me anxiety, so it would put me in a bad mental state. So it's probably not saving us a ton of time, but it's saving my mental health, really.
It's like a quality of life. It's just nicer in there and all that.
Yeah. So nice to come in there after you get home and everything is great. I don't know. Yeah. It's a huge life improvement.
Yeah. It's so different than when you come home and things are messy and you're like, especially if you're stressed out about other stuff and you're like, yeah. And on top of that, I have to figure out a time where I'm going to vacuum or, you know, whatever, wipe down the bathrooms or.
Yeah. So we don't have a cleaner currently. I've thought about it a little bit. And the thing is, like, we have a lot of open space. So in our time and schedule, and Elizabeth and I both clean a little bit here and there fairly frequently. So it's extremely rare for it to be like, oh, it's going to take us half a day to clean up. It's like, it'll take us 15 minutes to wipe a couple things down. And we do that frequently. That said, it probably wouldn't be bad to have someone come in, like you guys are saying, like once a month or every couple weeks to do like, maybe like some sort of a deeper cleaning or something like that. Maybe like before we head out on a trip, because this is one of our things that we like to do. So we'll go on a road trip or vacation or whatever. We want it to be clean when we get back. So before we leave, we'll often do a more thorough cleaning, which probably means like each of us spend 45 minutes on it. So we could probably save some time, and other people clean differently. Like to your point, Carl, like someone else would maybe like clean the oven completely differently or do some whatever, clean the shower tile differently or something like that. So it's something that I'll probably test out in the next 6 months, but it's not like a super high priority for the reasons that I mentioned. Although I'm open to y'all's ideas. If you're like, do it right away, like it's really going to be impactful. Cause I mean, I don't know what I don't know.
Have you guys even, you and Elizabeth, talked about it much, or is it just like, it's just occurring to you now that we're having this discussion?
We haven't talked about it, but I've thought about it for the last whatever year, just because conversations that I've had. And like, I remember Carl, before you had a cleaner, you were like, we should probably do that. So just it's in my radar. Yeah.
I think it's just the one area that is so easy to outsource to, because I mean, there's lots of people who want to do this work and things like that. We have a cleaner in Breckenridge too, and it's actually, I mean, she was like one of our friends before she became her cleaner, and she figured out how much money she was getting paid at her management type job and wanted to be able to make more money and have more flexibility to be with her kids. And she's like, I think I'm going to start cleaning people's houses. And we were like, we'll be your first client or whatever. Oh, cool. And she was super happy and eager to do that. But I think she said now she makes $75 an hour cleaning. And that was more than she was making at her salaried position, you know, doing management work. So, and she works less, spends more time with her kids. And then we don't have to we spend less time cleaning, spend more time with our kids as a result of that. So I think so great. And then I always say, like, oh, I don't mind cleaning. I'm like, well, which would you rather do? Would you rather go on a hike, or would you rather clean the house? I'm like, that's hypothetically, as long as we do the leisure time right, that's what we're freeing up by doing this. So,
yeah, that's a good one. Definitely easy. Like you said, it's easy to test. So I may as well give it a shot. Yeah. All right. I'll continue on with another thing that I don't typically outsource, and that is yard work. So for us, we were looking in the backyard before you got here, Rusty. I think I maybe have like 600 square feet of grass in a real mower. And that's like one of the little turny old style ones. So I don't have to deal with gas or plugs or anything. And it takes 10 minutes to cut. I just walk around a little bit. It's pretty easy. And that's probably the major part of the lawn area. There is, and I wouldn't outsource that, most likely. However, we do have a lot of xeriscaped through the yard. Am I saying that word right? It always throws me off. Close enough, right?
I say xeriscaped? I don't know.
Xeriscaped.
I don't know.
It's X's like, are tough.
X-E-R-I. Yeah. It's not a common letter combination.
For when sure. I first learned of it, I think I heard a lot of people say xeriscape, which is a different thing. Mm. And I was saying that, and then some folks corrected me, but I'm doing my best. So anyway, there is some opportunity for like weeding and other things in the yard, but I typically outsource that to Elizabeth, my wife, but she is probably at a point where she's like, you know what? It was fun to keep the yard in shape, but now like, I don't want to fucking do it. So I think that would probably be something like seasonally, a couple times a year, have it done, something like that. But typically there's not much to do in our yard. So yeah, I don't outsource that. Yeah. What about you, Rusty?
Well, that sounds interesting. I mean, to follow up on yours, that sounds interesting. Thinking about your yard and looking at it, I know there's not a lot of lawn. So you've kind of essentially taken out the lawn maintenance aspect of things by just not doing a lot of grass. I think you just got a little bit in the back, probably primarily for Georgie to have a place to run around on. So,
yep.
Yeah. So that's it. I mean, it's not technically outsourced, but it is a way to limit how much time you're spending on lawn maintenance activities by just designing it particularly well. So I think that's probably another, it's a separate discussion, but definitely related. Yeah. If you have a lawn like we do, and we were going to Xeriscape, and then we had the kids, and they love just playing in the lawn so much. And I mean, right now we've been in Boulder for the past like 6 months. And I mean, my son plays outside in the lawn every day, and neighborhood kids come over, and there's like toys strewn all about it. So we feel good about having a lawn, but that's different than the majority of people who I think have the lawn and then don't ever actually use it never actually set foot on it. They're just staying on their paths, and then it just becomes a huge maintenance chore. But we took care of the lawn for the past 5 years ourselves. And then this past year, having the baby, I was like, I told my wife, I thought it was time for us to outsource it. We paid attention to our neighbor, the people who do our neighbor's yard, the Vaqueros in Boulder, if anyone's curious. But we were like, oh, they do a really good job. And then so we started outsourcing to them. And now they come, they're like in and out in less than like 20 minutes. You know, they have like a team of three people. They do all the edging. They take the leaf blower through at the end. I mean, it looks like perfect. And it's something that if I were to do it to that level, it would take me a couple hours. And I don't enjoy it. You know, it's typically like hot outside, and it's taking away time and energy from something else I could be doing. So,
and all the equipment and upkeep on that.
So I finally wrapped my head around that, and I'm like, I should have done it sooner. I think that was one where I had more trust issues, because we like to let our lawn be a little bit more natural and things like that. And I was worried about someone really scalping it. Yeah. But now that we have someone that we have a company and they're doing a good job, I really like it. I do have a funny story too about one of my friends at the law firm. He wanted to hire the neighbor kid to mow his lawn, and his neighbor kid charges $20 to do the lawn. And so he wanted to do that. And his wife said, absolutely not. She was like, our kids are not going to grow up seeing someone else mow our lawn. Like, it's important that they see their dad out there mowing the lawn. And I just thought about that too. And especially now that I have kids, I'm like, what's so much more important for the kids is that you spend time with the kids than, you know, than that they see you out mowing the lawn, especially if the neighbor kid will do it for $20. Like, yeah. That one seemed like such a slam dunk to outsource. Wow. But he was like, weird. He's like, my wife will not let me pay the neighbor kid to mow the lawn. So,
Doug, you hit on something here we go with this word again, Xeriscaping, Xeriscaping, close to manscaping or Dougscaping. That was a separate conversation we had offline that the audience doesn't need to hear about. But when I think of some of the stuff in life, outsourcing versus insourcing, I don't want to, well, I want to get rid of it completely. And Xeriscaping did that. So we did the same thing with our lawn. We made it all rocks, and we put water-friendly plants in there, including one that's highly hallucinogenic, but that's a whole other story. Do not eat the plants in our yard. The moonflowers will be very bad. Another example I think along these lines is an EV. So we needed a new car. An EV doesn't really have anything to do with it except get new tires and windshield wipers. Every once in a while, like our Y has 60,000 miles on it, and I've done like nothing to it. And the car doesn't get washed. The car doesn't care if it's dirty. I don't care if it's dirty. So the car takes zero of my time, which is great. The other system I put in my house, and I did this one myself because I wanted to learn the ins and outs of it, is a hydronic heated floor. So I don't have a two-stage gas furnace, which is a very complex device, which always seems to be breaking. This is just a big resistor that heats up water and has a couple pumps. If it ever breaks, it'll be very easy to fix. I won't have to rely on HVAC people who tend to drive me crazy. So Yeah. In my life, if I can, I want to eliminate the task. I not only want to outsource it, I want to get rid of it completely from my life.
Very good. And looking on here, let's talk a little about the xeriscaping on your yard. Did you outsource that?
Ooh, this is one that goes back to you, Doug, because I remember telling you I was going to do this. You had just done yours and you did it yourself. And I was going to do mine myself too. I actually went down to the equipment rental place and saw how much you could rent the, I don't even remember what it's called, the little like scooper thing. So mm-hmm. I was going to get rocks dropped off and then learn how to use that machine and put them over my yard. And you, Doug, said, if I were you, I would not do that. I would hire it out. So I actually did. And that was great. It wasn't cheap, but they had a team of people working out there for a week. They had their own machines. They knew how to use it. There were no incidents where there probably would have been if I would have tried to operate the machine. Something bad would have happened. So outsourcing the xeriscaping was great. And I'm sure we probably haven't made our money back from that as far as lack of lawn maintenance, but we also spend zero time on it except watering those plants the first year and getting them established. That's it.
And like, I was kind of curious to see if I could do it. I did it in the middle of the summer. It was like 100 degrees and I had the time and I was like, I kind of want to see if I could do it. And I did. It was like, I think I moved like 15 tons of like rock and dirt. And in hindsight, it would have been probably good to at least outsource a part of it. But one thing I want to, you said something, which I think I want to challenge you on the logic on it, Carl. So you were like, we haven't made our money back yet by outsourcing it. But I think that's the wrong way to look at it because who gives a fuck? Like you had money budgeted or allocated or you had it didn't keep you from eating or doing anything else. So there was no real opportunity cost. It was just like you bought yourself probably 2 weeks of time and saved your back and all that kind of stuff. So just any thoughts on that? Like me challenging that?
Oh, you are. Line? Okay. You are absolutely 100% right. I'm still stuck in that mindset. Yeah. So I tend to optimize for the wrong thing. I should be optimizing for time and joy in life and not trying to save another $5,000 or whatever. So yes, you're absolutely right. I don't know. Do you both catch yourself like Rusty? Do you catch yourself still checking prices on something and then you step back from it and say like, why do I care if gas is like a dime more at this gas station? Or do you have any examples like that?
The gas is a hard one to get away from. I'm very aware of like, oh, this gas, if the gas station's near me, this gas station has the lowest price generally. And then I've created this story in my head about how it's family owned. And I like this guy because he's kitty corner from another gas station. And I think his policy is he just always is 5 cents cheaper than them. And so, but I'm like, I shouldn't even care. I shouldn't even like, I am too invested in this. I'm putting too much mental energy in it. And then Boulder itself has much more expensive gas than all the L towns. So if I'm in an L town, I'm like L town, Longmont, whatever, Lafayette, Louisville, Lyons. Okay. So anytime I'm there, I'm like, oh, do I need gas in the car? And I'm like, this is not how I should be spending my energy. I should be thinking about, you know, what's a good day. But yeah, the return on investment, I think I've pretty much broken away from that because I'm like, my making money or creating wealth right now is not tied to hourly employment. So I don't think about that as much anymore. It's like, yeah, it's like, who, I don't know, not to put words in your mouth, Carl, but it's like, who gives a fuck about whether I save $5,000 on xeriscaping when SpaceX just IPO'd and, you know, get a big return off of that. I'm like, if the stock market, if the S&P 500 goes up 1% today, it doesn't really matter if I save $5 on gas or anything like that. So I've tried to break free from that. And then I try to also realize that where my mental energy is so much better spent is on things like figuring out the good interest rates for loans or refinancing things strategically, making sure my investments are all set up correctly. I try to remind myself that like, that's where my energy needs to be spent financially. Like those are the few areas where it still does actually make sense for me to spend some time trying to optimize. And yeah, the trying to save the money on gas or the grocery store is just doesn't even move the needle for us at this point. So.
Yep. I'm the same. And I got a new guitar, everybody. It's a, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see it up there. But as I was telling you, Carl, I was like, oh yeah, I saw it and I got a good deal on it. And it's like, that's part of the story. And it's kind of part of the fun, but it doesn't matter if I had a strong negotiation, which I did, but it doesn't matter. And, but I still think about it and I'm like, oh yeah, like I'm up on that particular guitar or whatever. So yeah, yeah. It's just like, it's pretty ingrained. And I think like, there'll always be like some little aspect. I don't pay attention to gas. Like sometimes I'll fill up and Elizabeth is like, oh, how much was gas? And I'm like, I have no idea. I did not even look at all. Like I was getting the gas anyway, and I wasn't going to go anywhere different. So it literally doesn't matter how much it costs. She never listens to the show, so it's okay for me to say that. Yeah, yeah. Good points. And I think one other thing that we're not going to talk about, but I'll plant the seed. And if people want to shoot me an email, doug@milehighfi.com. One thing that I realized, and you and I were talking, Rusty, I've decoupled like money with like my hourly rate or what I value my time. And I'm not thinking about it that way. Like to your point, we're like living off investments and it doesn't, my time doesn't equate to like what I'm spending. It's coming from a different area. So I've like changed how I viewed it very slowly over the last couple of years. But as I'm spending money on a $40 lunch or something like that, I'm like, oh, it actually didn't really matter that much. Like I don't do that every single day. Even if I did, it probably wouldn't matter. But that said, if I have like an expensive lunch every now and then, or go on a vacation where like prices are just inflated, it's totally okay. And I'm not thinking like I spent weeks working on something to earn that money. It's completely decoupled. So huge topic.
It feels very luxurious because real quick, I used to plan a vacation. I'd go on all these stupid travel websites, Expedia, Travelocity, and be comparing hotel rooms and all this stuff, and just spend hours doing that nonsense. And it's so luxurious. I still maybe do it for like 5 minutes, maybe go on Google Flights, but that's it. And then I'm done. I know I want to stay here in this location in town. I'll find a place here that's got a good rating, no bed bugs. Just book it and go on with my life.
You ever had bed bugs?
I have, actually.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, it was a fancy hotel actually in Las Vegas, although it might have been the previous hotel where they came from. I don't know, but I woke up and I was on a trip with my friend. He's like, man, what's going on with you? There's like blood all over your sheets. I'm like, oh Jesus. Man. Yeah, and the bed bugs had got me in the night. Yeah.
And then in Las Vegas, those could be crabs though, right?
Yeah, I think they were bed bugs.
You think they were bed bugs? Yeah. That's your story, at least. Yeah.
And then that's when you shaved all your body hair, right? Because you were telling me about that.
I did, my eyebrows and everything. I got to be completely sure in case it was actually the crab situation.
Yeah.
It's itchy when it grows back, huh?
Yeah. It was very unpleasant, but the hotel will give you a bunch of money if this happens to you. It's pretty.
Yeah. Did you get, you got like a refund or whatever?
Yeah. They gave me like $1,000 on top of a refund. So, yeah.
Oh, man.
That's cool.
Yeah.
You could have had a personal injury lawsuit, though.
I should have looked at one of those billboards and called them up.
Oh, especially, yeah, when you're in Las Vegas, all those guys, there's billboards everywhere for personal injury attorneys.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you?
Those were all the guys we investigated when I was an anti-fraud attorney for insurance companies occasionally. Oh, really? And so, yeah, it's like I'd go to a new town and I'd see the billboards and I'd be like, we investigated that guy. We investigated her. Yeah. So.
Wow. So they try to commit fraud
in certain states, like in Florida. I mean, I don't want to paint with too broad of a brush, but yes, anytime you see a billboard for an attorney in Florida, they have been, I can't say they've committed fraud, but they've been investigated for committing fraud. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sorry, Florida.
but if you get bed bugs, like those guys come in handy. So yeah. I mean, if you have a legitimate claim, yeah.
Man, I got to get bed bugs again.
You start bringing your own bed bugs to the hotel. Oh, man.
Bedbugs.com.
Or just like, yeah, pricking your skin with a needle and putting your blood all over the sheets. Yeah.
I want to ask more questions, but I guess we should kind of stick to the topic a little bit more. Do you have a bed bug story too?
I don't know. Just, okay. Yeah.
That's That's fine. We can leave it at that.
Thankfully. Yeah, I hope to keep it that way.
So. So far, so good. So this is a big one for you, Carl. This is the home construction and repair. And famously, you've done a ton of like live-in flips. And I think you were a beginner, a novice in the beginning. and then you've gained skills over time, and you could probably build a house now. But talk about the journey, and I know you've outsourced a lot more with your new home.
Yeah, we've done probably, I think this is the 9th or 10th house we've done, and the last, I will not do another one. I think I told you that a couple houses ago, the dog. So anyway.
I think they have, Doug has you on record a lot of times saying you won't do this again.
We got to set up some kind of thing where if I do another project, I have to pay you like $10,000 or something.
All right. We all heard it.
Yeah.
But we used to try to do everything ourselves, and then we outsourced a couple projects. And without exception, the people we hired were just awful. I remember there were some guys working on a house, and I was like inside doing my real job. And I hear one of the workers going, "Hey, man, this doesn't fit." And the other worker goes, "Just shit it in, hit it with a hammer." So he said, "Just shit it in." I'd never heard that term before. It couldn't have been a good thing though. Shit it in, hit it with a hammer. So I'm like, "Oh God, why am I paying these people? I could do a better job." And then our other house in Longmont, actually, we hired someone and he was horrible too. And I should have known that when he's like, "When the inspector comes, I don't want to be around," because obviously there was bad blood there. I'm like, "Oh, so you know what? I'm just going to try to take on everything and anything I can myself, not even necessarily over the money, just because I want it to be done right." When we decided to do this new build, Mindy was like, "We can do it." I'm like, "Okay." And she's like, "As long as you don't ask me to do anything and you need to try to outsource as much of it yourself." And it took me probably a year to find someone I trusted. And sometimes you don't find them directly, but there's someone else you trust who recommends them. So, okay, if Todd says these people are good, Todd is super smart, I trust him, he's got a good bullshit detector, I can go with these guys. So that is what I did with this house. And it's worked out. The only time it's gone off the rails is when I've tried to do things myself, and sometimes things haven't gone so great. Very surprising.
Can't you just shit it in there?
Sometimes, but then you won't have air conditioning. And I forgot what your original question was, Doug. I don't know.
Just the journey, because just basically over time, you've learned how to do a lot of construction, and eventually you were like, "Okay, I've done it enough, and I want to just buy my way out of this."
Yeah, it's a little bit harder too here in Boulder County, because I interviewed a bunch of different builders, and I knew some of them from looking at their builds would have done a really good job, but they wanted like over $2 million to build this house. And this, what we're doing now, will probably be a little bit under $1 million. And I know they're doing quality work because I've inspected it all and had people inspect it as well. So it's difficult. Like if money was absolutely no object, maybe I would have gone with one of these hoity-toity people who I know will do a great job and they severely care and hire these super experienced craftsmen. But I did not want to do that. So it's a balance.
Do you feel like you've broken the habit? You think that you'll be able to trust people and outsource more of the house building repair stuff going forward?
Yeah, I think so. And it's because our network, our little network here in Longmont, like you've probably met Kerry at the HQ. He was like a big Boulder County building inspector. So he's like, "If you need this, go with these guys. If you need this, here's who you need to call." And I didn't listen to him and I paid the price. So Kerry was right.
Yeah.
You've had a lot of success. Like I've seen the work on your place in Boulder. You had super high quality.
We got lucky in Boulder and Breckenridge. With Boulder, our general contractor literally lives right behind us. Like we share a fence, and she's awesome. So she was like, she was on the Olympic training team for cycling, and then she got a bad knee injury. This is like her whole life story, but it's kind of interesting, but it just kind of emphasizes that she's a very highly capable individual, but got an injury with that. So her fallback was she went to Dartmouth and got an MBA, Ivy League educated, and then was in project management for a long time, and then switched over to GC work, like as her kind of last stage in life. And she was just like, I mean, it was like having a professional consultant running our construction project. And She was bidding people competitively and already has a stable of people that she likes to work with and stuff like that. And then her brother-in-law is like this awesome like cabinet maker. So he did all of our cabinets and stuff like that. And he only works with her. So kind of really lucked into that, because it's not like we picked the house knowing that there was like an awesome GC like right behind us. But that was great. We've only had one real horror story where there's only a couple guys in Breckenridge who can do the like log work. And so we hired one of them per recommendation from a carpenter that we knew. And he was in the throes of alcoholism. So he was like not showing up. He would like show up and then he would like crash his car. He would crash his truck into like one of our trees. And then he would, and then there was like his rear glass windshield had broken and there was glass everywhere and he didn't pick it up and things like that. And his family members were coming out to ask how he was doing. And I was oh God, like this is kind of a mess. And we had some family members who were alcoholics as well. And so it was like touching on a lot of stuff for us personally. And so that was not a great situation to be in. And then, we eventually fired him. Didn't really have a choice. And then, the next guy who came in, luckily just was super professional and did everything. But that was the only one that was like, I mean, it kind of defined our summer, because he'd be showing up and he was having all these personal problems and stuff like that. So I was like, that was about our worst experience outsourcing something, because now we're like talking to this guy and his family about trying to help him with this like this big problem that he's having that has nothing to do with our the deck that we hired him to do.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Doug, I think you did the right thing. You just bought a new house. You don't have to do anything at all. Someone's built it. It's high quality. I could see like air exchange system. I'm looking at it now. And then you can just sit there and enjoy life, which is what I hope to do in about a month or two from now.
Yeah. It ended up being a good move. Like we looked at some older places that were, I don't know, 20, 30 years old. And that's when some major systems need to be replaced. And they were fine, but basically I think we increased our budget by 25%. We didn't view it that way. We just looked at a new house and thought, this is awesome. We can spend the extra. And I mean, really, if you think about it, all the improvements and all the other stuff, it potentially would have been more than 100K to do all that stuff. And then everything worked out fine. Although in a new place, like every place has like a little problem here and there, because whatever, something didn't fit or there was a imperfection here or there. So we had a couple things we had to deal with, but it was still under warranty, which is crazy. But nice. It suits us really well. Highly recommend if you can just get a new construction, but it has to be in the right place and all that stuff. Are there any things that you guys are struggling with around home construction and repair? Where you're like, I don't know if I want to outsource that. Logically, maybe you think it is a good idea. Rusty, what do you got?
My big one that I'm struggling with now, and it wasn't something that hadn't even occurred to me. You can like hire these teams to do home maintenance for you, and they charge you like a monthly rate. And then if anything goes wrong with your house, they just come out and fix it. And the reason it occurred to me is that one of our other neighbors runs one of these companies. And I was like, that's a really good idea. But from what I can tell, it's about $5,000 a year to sign up for this. And I'm like, oh, $5,000 a year. But then you don't have to do any, if anything breaks, you never have to worry about fixing it. You just call these guys and they come out. I was like, oh, that actually would be a lot of peace of mind to just have the one phone number to call. And that's what we had at the apartments that we were living in most of our life. We had a dedicated maintenance team, and it's just one, you send an email to their shared email address and then someone comes and fixes it within 24 hours. And that was a pretty great feature to have. Even, things like our dishwasher broke once and they just came up with a new dishwasher the same day, because they had, it's an apartment building. Everyone has the same dishwashers. They just have extras lying around, I guess. So yeah, we got a brand new dishwasher put in the same day by a professional maintenance team. So I was like, oh, it was pretty nice when we had that. It was about as low maintenance of a lifestyle in terms of house repair as we could have. And then it was probably factored into the price of our rent, so we didn't even have to think about paying it. But now that we have to think about paying it separately, I struggle with that. And I guess I do struggle with the things that are more like a subscription like this, because you're signing up for it in perpetuity. And I'm like, oh, if I went with my neighbor, I was like, if we did want to cancel it at some point, would that be an awkward conversation? That would, you know, I don't think it would, because I think he's professional and he understands people have life circumstances, but it still would be, I think it'd be difficult to navigate. So I'm struggling to, to pull the trigger on that. But if I won the lottery, I mean, within a week, I think I would have dedicated home maintenance teams for both our places. So,
yes, interesting. Like you said, with the subscription model, I mean, you have them on retainer, so that's like you don't have to go search for someone. And then I think some issues that you ran into, or everyone runs into, it's like, yeah, we need the whatever the toilet's leaking, we need somebody to come and fix it. And they're like, oh, but I'm pretty busy, whatever. But if you've been paying them $5,000 a year for a while, then they're like, oh yeah, we'll be right out. Cause I mean, they've been banking the money the whole time. So they have to show up when you call them. Interesting. Yeah. What about you, Carl? Anything where you're like, I should probably outsource this thing, but I haven't, construction repair wise?
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned this, Doug, cause I spent like 2 hours this morning trying to figure out where to buy this stupid cable, like calling people in Denver and Fort Collins. And I eventually just had to go online and order it, but I kind of wanted it tomorrow. So now I'm screwed. And this is for my solar project. And I started thinking about this. There's been other challenges with this too, like where I need a part or they sent the wrong thing or the wrong number. So I've had to call it back. So to back up a second, I've had dishwashers break in my life many times and I could fix a dishwasher super quickly. So I think that skill might be worthwhile because they're pretty simple and I can probably fix most dishwasher issues in under half an hour. But the solar panel thing, which I've been fighting for like the past 2 weeks of my life, I'll probably never do it again in my life. And it's not going to make me any more resilient. If something broke, I'd be able to fix it, even if something else had put them on originally. Yeah. So this has been a tremendous waste of my time. I can tell you all about 600 volt shielded Cat5, Cat 6E Ethernet cables and how to outsource these, but I don't really want to know how to source these stupid cables either. Very tedious and not something I enjoy. So I should have just outsourced this whole thing. And I attempted to, I probably should have put a little bit more effort into it though.
Very good.
Are you having a lot of those like moments of regret like this with doing the solar panels?
Not really. I think overall it's gone very well and been very satisfying. Most things it's worked out better than I thought it would, much better actually. But and that might be why the solar panels seem that much worse, because everything has gone so well that you when you run into something that's consuming your time, like I didn't go to the gym, like today was supposed to be my upper body workout. I'm like, nope, I gotta sit here and try to find this fucking Cat 6E 600 volt shielded cable. Which no one sells, or they won't sell you because you're not a contractor. So yeah, maybe it's a reaction to that. Everything has gone so well that I'm spoiled that when something goes awry, you're like, shit, and it's more tedious. I don't like when things interfere with my workout, Doug. I didn't get this body sitting around researching Cat 6E cables online. I got it from being at the gym. When I can't go to the gym, I'm just going to turn to a blob of Jell-O.
Yeah.
I know you asked me to do this without my shirt on, and I thought that would be weird for the audience, and I don't know where you're going with that, Doug, but I'm going to keep all my clothes on.
Well, I had it cold down here.
Are we supposed to pop our tops? I don't know.
Yeah.
I thought
that's how we record.
I thought that was just for the OnlyFans episodes.
Yeah, you said that raw dog term, Doug, and I don't know what that, or raw dog. Did you say raw dog or raw dog? But I don't want to have anything to do with either of those terms, whatever they mean. I'll go to Urban Dictionary and find out after I leave your house.
And if you want to see more, you can head over to myhifi.com/OnlyFans. It's a lot of foot stuff. Carl, I didn't tell you, we do have a camera on your feet. That's why I asked you to take your shoes and socks off.
Interesting. So. That was a weird request too.
Yeah. Your feet are sweaty. We're touching the bottom of our feet right now.
Are you going to sell like socks and like they do? Supposedly you can buy underwear and Japanese vending machines that have been worn once. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have some new socks to send you home with, so you can just leave the ones here. I'll definitely get them back to you.
Why is there so much asparagus underneath the desk? It's between Carl's toes right now.
Actually, yeah, we'll have to take some photos. Yeah. You gotta wash them first. Like, It's very clearly labeled.
Is that asparagus touching my leg, or are you happy to see me, Doug?
Speaking of cooking and food, the next one on the list here is cooking. And if people have listened to the shows with Rusty and I, like, we talk about food all the time. And that's something that, like, I'm not interested in outsourcing. Like, I've never ordered grocery delivery. I like to go to the store and I like to pick my meat. I like to go in there and feel the bananas and thump a couple melons if I can. I really, it's a fun part of my week to go to the store. And then cooking is even more fun. So I spend a lot of time doing that, thinking about it, and I don't think I would outsource it. I do hear from people that are like, actually, it's better for me to not go to the grocery store because I tend to buy a bunch of stuff that I don't need. But I have no issue with that. It's fun if I buy something I don't need and get to cook something a little bit different. So Rusty, I think you're probably similar in this area.
Yeah, I think this is one. This is probably the biggest area that people in the United States outsource the cooking and the grocery shopping. And it's easy to do. And we have done it occasionally. I mean, like, yeah, we've obviously ordered DoorDash, or, you know, we've gotten Instacart to have them deliver our groceries before. But I mean, yeah, we're cooking at home 95% of the time plus. So this is one where I think it actually does bring us joy. And I don't think I'm fooling myself with that one. Like, I think I actually truly enjoy it. Like, even if it was like my last day to live, I think I'd still want to cook my own food and not just like splurge and order in from carryout restaurants. I really enjoy cooking my own food, and I enjoy the way my food tastes better than most of the places that we get it from. So that's, but I think this is one where I think a lot of people outsourcing, and I question maybe if this is an area where there's like too much outsourcing being done. Cause, you know, if you're letting the Nestle company or the Kraft company determine what you're eating and what's going into your body, you might actually be making some compromises on your core values that you don't want to be making, like having, Nestle or Kraft make your macaroni and cheese instead of making your own macaroni and cheese from scratch. You might be giving up something there that you don't even realize is important to you. But having said that, I think there are some people who like don't actually get much joy from cooking at all. And I think if that's the boat you're in, I think there are ways to do this one smartly. So,
Yep. And Carl, you don't enjoy cooking very much, right? So what's your take on this?
No, I find it, Doug, you don't have to go to the grocery store to stroke your banana. I think that's what you said, but I don't know. I guess that's
so I said tricky. Peel your banana.
Okay. Well, that's even worse. I do not enjoy cooking, and I do not enjoy going to the grocery store. And I don't enjoy going to the grocery store because Mindy loves to cook, and she cooks with some exotic ingredients. Great. So she'll be like, can you go to the grocery store and get me some granulated cubed Portuguese cornstarch? I'm like,
oh, yeah.
What aisle is that? That's cornstarch. She'll be like, oh, that's in the graham cracker aisle. I'm like, where the fuck are graham crackers? Like, are they crackers? Are they cookies? Like, I don't know. That's so ambiguous. So I'm there for like 10 hours. Like, you've got the King Super Zap and that kind of sucks. It's probably one of the most anxiety. Mindy's saying, I need you to go to the grocery store is like the sentence that gives me more anxiety than more than anything in my life, which is I'm in a great place if that's what gives me anxiety. But and then what always happens, inevitably, I'll be checking out and I'll be walking out the front and then the phone bings. If you haven't left the store yet, can you get this and this? I'm like, but she's a great cook and it's completely worthwhile to put up with this. But no, I enjoy your cooking. I've had both your food. You're both very, very good cooks, but I enjoy the eating part more than the cooking part.
Yeah. Very good.
I think people do outsource too much, especially going out to eat. Like, it seems like Longmont's becoming a huge food court. So many restaurants. And a lot of times you'll be having a meal and it's great for the social part of it. But a lot of times you're eating something and you're like, you know, I could do, even me who has little to no cooking skills, I could do better than this at home, or at least the same. So
yeah. And it tends to be more unhealthy often. And not that I cook the greatest food all the time as far as health, but I mean, you're more likely to just have like a little bit less fat and maybe like more veggies and higher quality meat, that kind of thing. So
I so rarely like deep fry something at home, but if you're out at a restaurant, that's it's a lot easier to get something deep fried than it would be. It'd be a big production for me to deep fry something at home.
Although side note, and then we'll move more quickly on the last couple. I see the time is ticking along. It's so fun to chat with you guys. I don't deep fry stuff too often and it makes a mess in the house, but I have a small induction burner, like hot plate style. So I deep fried some, I basically made like chicken nuggets and just kind of threw it together. I just cut them up and I was like, fuck, these, it's so good. I was like, this is really, really good. And like you said, it's a bit of a production. You have to do something with the oil. You could kind of reuse it, but you need to filter it, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But it was really good. And I literally just like threw it together, put a little flour and some seasoning. And it was like better than you can get at pick your favorite chicken place.
Can you do it outside then with that induction plate? Is that,
that's
what you do to make it less messy?
Do it outside. Otherwise, like grease just fucking covers everything.
Right.
Even with a splatter screen and all that stuff. So
we have gas burners now too. So it's like, you really don't want grease splattering around gas burners.
Yeah. Okay. Next is childcare and child's education. So I will bow out of this one as someone with no kids. So Rusty, what's your take?
Well, being in the thick of having young kids, this is one that I was like, oh, this is actually what people are doing, I think, without realizing is outsourcing their child's development. And I guess for us and having us not working, it's just like, didn't even really cross our mind to put our kids in daycare. And I think that's another one where it does go to your core values. It's like, who's going to be raising your kids? Is it going to be you or is it going to be someone you're hiring out? And at least for us in the situation we were in, it was nice to be able to just be like, feels right to do it ourselves. And so we've been doing it mostly ourselves. We had a hard time at first, like outsourcing any of it, like even like getting a babysitter or a nanny or having our son go to preschool. And we kind of landed on like 3 half days a week with our son going to his preschool. And that's actually been, it feels like the right balance. So it's about 14 hours a week that we outsource. We'll get babysitters occasionally and we felt guilty about that at first, just because not the spending money aspect of it, but the not like we could be there technically, neither one of us is working. We could always have at least one of us there, but it's nice for us to have some time to connect, just me and my wife. So we do outsource that some, but it's been nice to not have to have it be 40 hours a week. And that's one of the things that it's probably been like the biggest benefit of financial independence is like that we could do the childcare aspect of things ourselves. Not that you have to be at financial independence to do that, but it's definitely made that easier for us. So yeah.
Similar to Rusty, we did not put our kids in daycare. A tremendous luxury to be able to not have to do that, where you don't have two working parents or any working parents. School, though, we were definitely outsourcing that. Our tax dollars pay for that. We'll be deliberate and thoughtful about it, like assess the teachers and try to do all that. But like COVID happened and we had to be homeschool people. And one of our kids reacted very well to that. And the other one was just the opposite. And it was pure misery during COVID for that child. And I'm a bad teacher and she's very social and it did not work. So I'm happy to outsource their education. Plus the teachers are experts at it. Like once my kid, like I took advanced math, I was in calculus and all that, but I don't remember a lot of the stuff they did. Y equals MX plus B. So I'd be sitting there reading and re-educating myself on all this so I can explain it to them. And I'd just rather have a teacher do that.
Next up is financial management. And I'll go first here. So we have hired a financial advisor and I think it works really well for us because for Elizabeth to retire, and she retired a couple years ago, she needed more reassurance than our own analysis. She wanted a lot of due diligence and other people to look at it. And that worked really well. The other thing is it's not an assets under management situation for us. And in fact, like it's more like analysis and projections and a plan. And then, our advisor, Steve, takes the input that we give him. So if we had like some high priority things or something that we really valued, then we could put it into the plan. All that to say, we manage the reallocation and selling, he would say like, hey, you need to execute these kind of trades, and then we do it. And if we disagreed, then we'd be able to say, well, we're not going to do that. Readjust it, figure it out. So it works well for us. And I know in the FI community, it's a lot of DIY. I think more of the value is probably on the decumulation side, where there's more potentially like tax impacts or other things you need to think about. Accumulating is pretty straight, I think. Just save more. So what about you, Rusty?
Do you feel any, I have a follow-up question for you if I can, but do you feel any like, I mean, you have a financial independence podcast, and DIY for financial management is such a big part of this community. Do you feel ever like guilt or like you're an imposter by outsourcing the financial management piece? And I'm not trying to say that you should. I'm just saying I can imagine someone feeling that way by all the FI messaging that's out there.
I think, no, not at all. I think part of it is my massive ego. But the thing is, everyone has blind spots. And by definition, you don't know what they are. So if you're like, I don't have blind spots, then you're even more susceptible than if you are like thinking, hey, there's a bunch of stuff that I don't know. Most things I don't know. So overall, no, I don't feel like it's an issue. And I think for some people, it might be a problem. But for other folks, it's like a good thing to do, because again, you don't know your blind spots. And I have also heard people say, and we have friends who are CFPs and like very well qualified. Like, obviously, you guys both know a lot, and I could show you my portfolio and be like, what do I need to look out for? But you're just hobbyist, and you don't know what you don't know either. So, like, I think when people go to bring their spreadsheet to a couple friends and they're like, oh yeah, you should be fine. It's like, are you going to fucking count that they didn't make a mistake? Like, did they have the training to actually identify a fuck up in your spreadsheet? And the answer is probably not. No, right. They don't have that. It doesn't mean people aren't smart enough to do it, or that we couldn't dissect and really help somebody out. But like, pay the pros to do professional shit. And then like, don't put that on your friends. I think it's okay if you get advice, but like, I think that's more of an issue where you're like, well, so-and-so said it was okay. And maybe I think more people would be upset with me for saying that.
Right.
What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think it's really positive. I mean, the first time that I heard someone in like the FI community say that they were using a financial advisor, I was like, that's the one thing you can't do. But now more people talk about it, and I'm like, it totally makes sense. And it's a positive development, because I'll get into my own like backstory and issues for why I have such a hard time trusting financial managers. But other people might not have that same backstory and have the same drive to just like learn it all, do it all themselves. Mine comes from a not very healthy place. The big thing, this is like honestly one of my defining things in life and what drew me to start learning as much about personal finance as I did, is my grandpa had a stockbroker steal $1 million from him, just straight up embezzlement. And I feel comfortable saying that that's exactly what happened, because the guy went to federal prison for doing it. So it was just like shocking to learn this. So I was at home at my parents' house one day, which I'm not, this was as an adult. And I saw their mail, and I saw there was something from the federal courts. And since I was an attorney, I was like, well, shit, like what the hell's happening with my parents? They're getting something from the federal courts. And so took a look at it, and it was like, it was addressed to my grandpa, but anyways, my parents were receiving it because my grandpa has died. And so his paperwork goes to his estate. And so my dad was getting it. And anyways, opened it up. It said, you are the victim of a crime perpetrated by this person. We were writing to inform you that they're being let out of jail. And then I went online, looked up what the court records were. I was like, what's going on here? And there's like, my grandpa's initials were the victim's name, and I could see everything that happened. And I was just like, holy shit. Like, I had no idea. And I talked to my parents about it. My dad really tried to play it down. And was like, oh, this is just something that happened, but it wasn't a big deal. I was just like, that was when I was in my 20s and I was kind of starting out my own investing journey. I was just like, these people are snakes, they are wolves. I can't do this anymore. And so the need for me to be like extra vigilant, I think was extra heightened at that time. Yeah. The guy was with the scheme that he was running is he was a stockbroker, and the way stockbrokers used to work and maybe still work, but you send them a check and then they would buy the stocks for you. And so my grandpa would send the guy checks, and instead of buying the stocks, I guess the guy would just like put it into his own bank account. So about as bad of a situation as you could do. So for us, that, so like, you know, we talked earlier about trust issues being a part of the outsourcing discussion, but I'm like, man, I can't really trust any of these people at all. And even still, you know, I've told you guys, like we're at Morgan Stanley now, 'cause we wanted to get the securities backed loans there when they had good rates. And so we have a financial advisor there, and they would normally charge assets under management, but I negotiated so that they don't, but I still go through every statement and I'm like, did they steal any of my money? So that's my own personal background. But if I didn't have that, I think I'd be at least receptive to the idea of using someone to do some more of the financial advising. But as of right now, we aren't using anyone for financial advice.
Oof. Well, what was your original question, Doug? Should we use an advisor? Do we use an advisor?
Would you outsource any financial advice?
Funny enough, we are going to go to be on a podcast next week with these CFPs, and they're going to assess our situation and give us some advice. But I think someone in the general population definitely should talk to someone, because like we're obsessed with 401ks and Roth IRAs and can talk about all that stuff. But I don't think most people could. Like if you ask 100 people on the street the difference between a Roth IRA and a 401k, like how many people do you think could explain the like post-tax, pre-tax aspect of it?
Yeah.
Do you think most could or not?
Yeah, I bet it's like 20%, 30%, something like that.
But I think there comes a need as your wealth grows. Like this is an extreme situation, but I have a friend who works for SpaceX and he's been there for a while. So now he's finding himself with extreme wealth, very concentrated wealth. And there's things you could do about that. You can have, I don't even know the correct terminology, options or hedges or something. So you can remain in this concentrated position, but if it goes down, you're protected. And there's some other kind of fund where you can diversify without the tax hit. But these things are very, very exotic, and you need to have someone who knows what they're doing to successfully execute these things. So I think it becomes more relevant as your money grows. And I think you had added something pretty important, Doug. The decumulation stage might be more important. And I'll go into our situation really quick. Like we way oversaved in our 401ks. Like 90% of our wealth is in post-tax stuff. Mm. So we can't get at it for a while. So now we're looking at 72 T's, and that's a complex thing. You don't want to mess that up, or you'll get a nasty letter from the IRS in the mail and have to pay lots of penalties. So yeah, I think it matters more for most of us in the community on the decumulation stage, like you said, Doug, how to effectively get your money out and have access to it when you need it.
Very good. Yeah. So we don't know everything. It's okay to get some help sometimes. All right. Next is car maintenance. So yeah, what about you, Rusty? Do some stuff.
So we didn't have a car for a long time. I never learned how to really take care of a car myself too. So we outsource pretty much all the car maintenance, and I'm a little bit of a, like, I feel like I'm a little bit of a sucker walking into the car repair shops and stuff. Like, I mean, I can do a little bit of Googling so that I know something going in, but I don't have a huge desire to learn how to do it. I grew up and my dad was a big car guy, and he would have like 5-6 cars at any given point in time. And he'd be spending his weekends like out there, like tinkering with them. I don't even know what he was doing, but I remember like I have bad associations with him spending more time with the cars than he did with me. So I'm a little bit scared to even start going down that rabbit hole. But we have the electric vehicle now, which is like no maintenance, like Carl said earlier. And then and then just getting the oil changed and having someone else change out the tires and stuff like that. Those are, I mean, you just drive right up to the places basically, and they want your business. And I feel like they don't just like totally rob you. So I'm happy to have someone else do that. And I don't mind getting dirty, like dirt, but like when I feel like it's like the chemicals that come out of a car, like those are things I'd rather not expose myself to. So outsourcing some of that risk of being exposed to that stuff is something I'm happy to do.
So growing up, my dad was a big American car proponent. Like we must buy an American made vehicle. And those were dark days for Detroit. I think American cars are much better now, but we had cars like the Ford Maverick, and that one wasn't too bad, but the Chevy Citation, do you remember that thing? Uh-uh. Oh, it's a, look it up, Google. It's a horrible, horrible vehicle and very ugly too. And so my dad would spend like every weekend, I think I learned how to swear because he would spend every weekend trying to fix these things. And we'd go on family road trips and they'd break down on the side of the road. So he'd be replacing like a fuel pump in the motel parking lot. So I too have very bad associations with cars, maybe for a slightly different reason though, Rusty. So I'm like, I don't want to deal with any of this. So when I could buy a car, I went out and bought a Honda made in Ohio. So maybe that would make it a little bit better in my dad's eyes. And then now we have two EVs. So there's really nothing to do with those. And you don't even have to go to the gas station because you just plug it in at home.
Yeah.
But car maintenance sucks. The last thing I ever did was a brake job on my Honda Element, which I actually drove here. Yeah. I remember it was like super cold out and I'm in the disc wouldn't come off. So I've got a blowtorch down there and I'm whacking with a hammer. And yeah, it was a miserable day. And like halfway through this, after spending hours, I'm like, why am I doing this? I despise working on cars because I used to help my dad too. You'd like the bolt, you'd be trying to get a bolt loose and it wouldn't come loose. And then all of a sudden it would break and then your knuckles get whacked on some like rusty part and there's crap and blood flying everywhere. I'm like, this is not how I want to spend my weekends.
Yeah. Not too fun. That's another area where, I don't do anything. But I was going to say, if you wanted to do it, a lot of stuff might be within reach, but you have to buy a bunch of tools and other equipment, most likely. And unless you want to have that as a hobby, it's probably a great thing to not deal with. So...
And even as someone who doesn't do it at all, I have a friend who is a diesel mechanic and he just like loves it. He buys old Japanese cars and that are diesels and fixes them up himself and does it with his son and his son loves it too. Like,
cool.
So I can see how some people, it makes sense and it adds value to their life. But for me, it doesn't align with my values. Yeah.
All right. And last one here is someone added this at the end here. It's a bit of a trigger for me. So someone put haircuts. And who put that on?
I put that on. I figured you were the master of not outsourcing haircuts.
Yeah. So I shave my head. For the people that just listen, I shave my head totally bald. And it's great. I love it. I resisted shaving my head for a while because I knew I would like it so much. But just it feels good. There's something.
You save money on shampoo and conditioner, right?
I haven't bought shampoo or conditioner in decades. Yeah. It's great. So I shave my head maybe like twice a week or so. I'm okay if it grows a little longer. You've seen me a couple of times where I've been growing it out. It's like 1/8 inch long. Yeah, I haven't been to a barber in, is that what you call them? Hairdresser, barber? Would they need to style my hair? A stylist? I don't fucking know. Anyway.
Scott, style your skull.
I go in with pictures. I'm like, I really like this look. It's like all the same bald guy. Like, what is this? So I haven't been in a long time and save a ton of money. So yeah. You outsource though, right, Rusty?
I did my own hair on my journey to financial independence. I was doing my own haircuts, just with the clippers at home. And then I kept doing it for a while after we retired. And then maybe like 3 years ago, I was like, I'm just going to go to one of these places and get my haircut, see how it goes. And it was like, awesome. It was so much, so much better. Like you don't have to clean up afterwards too. You don't get like they put the cape on you. So you don't get like hair everywhere. It was like even driving there and back, it was still faster than me trying to do it myself. And then I always need like help on like the back edge too. So I'd have to like rope my wife into coming in and helping me as well. So, and then it turns out, so it was like kind of a stressful experience to do on my own, but then I went and got it done and it's like very relaxing. They like They give you like a little like a shampoo massage and put like a hot towel on your face at the place I go to. So nice. I was like, oh, and then it's generally a pleasant social interaction too. And generally the people who want to cut hair are, they like talking to people. I think it helps the time go faster for them too. I go to the same woman all the time. So we have like a little bit of a relationship going. So I found it to be value add. That was something where I've switched from not outsourcing to outsourcing, and I feel like pretty good about it.
Is it a real quick, is it a fancy place? One of my neighbors worked at this fancy salon in Boulder, and I'm not going to get my hair cut there, but my kid did. Like the neighbor's like, oh, just come in there and I'll give you a haircut. So I walked in there and I go in this place and like, oh, hello, sir. I'm like, yeah, I'm here for my kid's haircut. And they're like, do you want a beer? We have a cooler right there. Like, help yourself. I'm like, because I do cut my hair at home, but like with that, I might be able to get into it if the experience was actually enjoyable. Like, is this a bar? Did I come here to get my haircut? Or it's all the above.
I go to Floyd's the barber shop. It's a chain. It's based out of Denver, I believe. But yeah. I mean, it's just pretty fast in and out, but they give you like a little massage gun massage on your shoulders, and they put a hot towel on your face while they shampoo your hair. So, I mean, there's nice aspects to it, but I don't feel like I don't feel as relaxed as if I was at a bar for sure.
This is the wrong question, but how much does it cost?
I think it's like, and I tip well, and it ends up being like $50. Oh, so yeah.
How often do you get your haircut?
I do like a 30s, like I do 30 something percent tip, like once a month.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. When you were talking about cutting your own hair and the mess and all that stuff, I've cut my hair for a long time. I would just have clippers and stuff. I think this is a pretty white trash thing that I did. I would just like cut my hair in the yard. So it just fucking blow around. Like I don't have to sweep it up. But I'm like, it just makes sense. Like it's, I don't know, protein, calcium. I don't know what the fuck's in here, but just let it blow around and it was fine.
It's for the birds. They probably have it in their nest somewhere. Your hair exists somewhere. It's up in a tree.
That's right. Cool. I think we covered everything on our list here. We went longer than I expected. It was really fun. So if people have comments out there, you can shoot me an email, doug@milehighfi.com. Rusty, thanks for joining. And Carl, thanks for popping in.
Thank you, Doug.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer. This show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. Kind of a, not a confession, but just to be transparent. Sometimes when I pee, I sit down.
Okay.
And did you knew that, of course, right?
I think so.
And why is that?
I think I walked in on you when we shared a room at the at Economy. We were in the room. We didn't share a bed. We had separate beds. I know you requested that, but I went to the front desk. I'm like, we need separate beds. But yeah, I thought you were gone. I walked in the bathroom and there you were.
I didn't even know. It was at night. But truthfully, at night, I will sit down to pee. Then I don't have to turn on the light. You could imagine for the ladies and other people that don't normally stand up to pee at night, if you don't flip on the light, then it could be a catastrophic mess. So sitting down, you don't have to turn on the lights. And I think it's a good move. So you guys don't have to answer if you do not want to.
But Rusty, do you sit down to pee?
I just want to hear more of the story about Carl walking on you peeing. I like that he had visual confirmation of this. So
it was dark. He didn't know I was there. He sat right on me.
It was beautiful. I think you gave me a hug then. Yeah, it was nice.
So do I sit down to pee? Yeah, I do, actually. I didn't anticipate sharing this. I don't think I've shared this with many people privately, let alone publicly. So this is an instance where I'm glad to have my face blurred.
Yeah. Yeah.
I normally will sit down to pee. I think it gets more pressure on the bladder and you get like a more full release. Oh. So especially like right before bed, I think if you sit down to pee, I think you can potentially avoid or delay having to wake up to pee during the night.
How about that? Medically, there's a solid reason for it. Okay. Well, thank you for opening up. I know it's not something that you were planning on. I didn't let you know.
My smart toilets, they do have a feature where it's like a little nightlight just for peeing at night. So it just lights up the bowl and doesn't, you don't have to turn on the full bathroom light. So that was a nice feature that I anticipated using, but yeah, now I'm just sitting down. I guess I'm just like older now.
You ever get caught up in your phone, so you sit there to pee, and then 15 minutes later, you're scrolling Instagram or...
I was just playing with the remote on the smart toilet.
Yeah, what about you, Carl? How often do you sit?
I sit 9 out of 10. I've got two things to say about this. Three things, actually. The third one's going to be disturbing. Wait for number three. Okay. So, number one, my kid went on a trip to Germany with some school tour, and she, I don't know how this came up in conversation. It's kind of disturbing, but she said the Germans have like a derogatory name for men who sit down to pee. And I've never thought about this until this conversation right now. So I don't know if that's true or not, but she said they specifically have like a put down if you're a man who sits down to pee. Mm-hmm. But number two.
Is it a Carl? Is that the name?
I'd say it's Schisten Carl or something. Yeah, I don't know. Number two is I do sit down. And the main reason is I've done all the tile in the bathrooms and it's really nice. And I'm surprised this didn't come up with either of you two. Like 95 times, maybe 98 times out of 100, the pee comes out in a nice stream. But then the other 2-5%, it's just like something's bound up down there and it just goes everywhere. It's like the shower function on your garden hose. And so and it's like slow motion. You just see your pee like a firecracker and it goes all over the nice grout that I just did. And I know some of it's going to soak in there and it's going to be discolored. So that really annoys me. So I sit down to pee to avoid that situation. But number three, a question.
And there's a third one. Jesus. Wow.
This is a follow-up for Rusty about the smart toilet. And this is disturbing. Again, you don't have to answer. So I've got one. I don't have the nice smart toilets like you. I just bought like the $29 bidet attachment for my toilet. And you go right for the buttocks for the butt, doing a number two, and you go left for the female feature. And every once in a while, it'll be the middle of the night. I'm not paying attention to what I'm doing. I go the opposite way, the female thing. And it's like, picture a boxer with one of those speed bags, do, like it hits the back of
I had that
bean bag.
I think there's a German word for that too.
That's a Doug. That's a German word for that. It's a Doug.
Dougstein.
It's a cold, wet Doug.
That's that happened to me this morning, actually, when I was a few minutes late coming here. And part of that experience was I went the wrong way on the bidet feature.
Oh, man.
And yeah, I was like, yeah. And then it's like all of a sudden you like are sitting up a little straighter on the toilet because you're getting a free ball wash.
Yeah, yeah.
So, it's like an unintended ball wash.
It's hard to top that.